podcasts.
The National Party has scrapped its commitment to reach net zero emissions by 2050, but it says it still wants to reduce emissions. It comes as its partner in the coalition, the Liberal Party, continues its review into energy policy. David Littleproud is the leader of the Nationals and Shadow Minister for Agriculture. He joined me a short time ago.
Thanks for having me.
The party committed to net zero in 2021. What's changed?
Well, the lived experience of the costs of Australians' energy bills continue to going up, the job losses and the future job losses even of, in the last week of Tomago, whereby we still have a responsibility to continue to reduce emissions and we want to live up to that. But we believe there's a cheaper, better, fairer way to do that, living up to international commitments, but putting at the fore of that affordable energy for Australians and for industry, looking at adaptation, investing back into the environment around adaptation of our climate and environment, and making sure that we keep pace with the rest of the world, not get ahead of it too far. And that's why when you're about 1.1% of total emissions, what we want to say is, well, we shouldn't let ourselves get away from that percentage, and we should peg ourselves to what the rest of the world is, not become a laggard, but not streak ahead and make sure that we have a consistent policy that's not going to cost Australians, which at this the cost of net zero by 2050 will be $9 trillion. That will put things like Medicare and NDIS at risk when we can still live up to our international commitments and calmly reduce emissions in a sensible way. And that is the policy that we have come up with yesterday as a result of the lived experience over the last 4 years.
You're talking about Australia contributing 1% when it comes to emissions. We know that Australia's emissions per capita are around three times the global average. Does Australia need to do more heavy lifting?
No, I think we should do our fair share, particularly when there's an energy affordability issue for Australians at the moment, not just in industry, but for households. There's Australians tonight that will not have dinner, that can't afford to put dinner on the table. In an energy-rich country such as Australia, the fact that we've got ourselves into this predicament is time to pivot. And when you see what the rest of the world is doing, you're seeing not just in terms of achievements of goals, but also their aspirational targets into the future. Why wouldn't we make sure that we keep pace with them rather than streak ahead more than
what the Albanese government is doing? But you're out of step with the Business Council of Australia and the National Farmers Federation. They count the dollars pretty carefully. Why is your position so different?
Well, with all due respect, the Business Council of Australia, I'd hardly take any gratuitous advice from. They get to pass it on. They get to pass it on to you. Big business can sign up to this because you know who pays? It's you. It's when you go to the checkout. It's when you go to buy or to build a home.
But they're obviously seeing market opportunities there as well in the renewable space as well. They don't want job losses.
No, and nor do I, but let me tell you that renewables is not the only way to have and to create jobs. You need reliable, affordable energy. Just ask the people at Tomago. Where was the BCA sitting at the front door of Tomago asking them about how and why they're in trouble? They're in trouble because they don't have affordable energy. And I'm not saying we should run away from our commitments. We should actually live up to reducing emissions. That's a good thing. Make no mistake, I believe man has made a contribution to climate and the
change. But not having a target.
But what we do, we're pegging ourselves to what the rest of the world does. So we're eminently responsible in making sure we're continuing to do that, but not streaking ahead of the rest of the world that's putting jobs at risk and putting Australian families.
How are we streaking ahead if our emissions per capita are three times higher than the average?
In terms of our global emissions, I think this is where the reality of getting to this per capita is a puerile argument. The reality is each country has a responsibility, and this is where they get into even things like Scope 3, saying Australia should have to pay for that because we export a lot of resources overseas that are then burnt. The reality is each country is responsible for its own economy and what it can contribute, and in terms of what we're contributing and what we actually put out in terms of carbon and what we can mitigate. And this is what you should understand as well. It shouldn't be just about what we actually are emitting. It's what we can mitigate. And that's what we're saying is we should also look at that
adaptation.
What does that mean? Well, we can't cut enough emissions in Australia to save the planet when we're only a small amount of the total emissions globally. We're 1.1% of total global emissions.
So but isn't why this wouldn't... picture about all countries lifting, doing the heavy lifting that they need to do? So when our emissions are three times higher per capita, it's not us streaking ahead, we're actually behind.
No, we're not. And in fact, if you look at where the rest of the world is pivoting to, and some of the pledges that came out, in fact, there's 128 countries that have not even made a pledge to the 2035 target. That was due back in March. So the rest of the world is understanding a lot of the low-hanging fruit has been done, and it's now re-pivoting. You look at countries like Canada. The UK has streaked ahead, and in fact, only last week, Keir Starmer is now reconsidering 8 gigawatts of renewable energy coming, reconsidering it because of the energy costs that UK residents and industry are feeling. So this is where we shouldn't walk away from reducing emissions. I'm not saying that in any way, shape or form. What I'm saying is we should do it in a responsible way.
You're walking away from a 2050 target, though, which previously the Nationals were committed to.
We can't get there. This is the thing. There's no country that is going to get to net zero by 2050. And if they do, they will destroy their economy. And that's
what's
why
your
you're
evidence
seeing,
for
so,
that?
Well, again, by the fact that we have already seen the reduction in terms of the commitments by countries around the world, and in fact of what they've achieved against their pledges for 2030. So this is the thing, is that the hard work is now ahead of us in terms of how much it's going to cost. And that's why the world's pivoting. And for us to go from trying to abate around 9 million tonnes to 21, 22 million tonnes a year, that we are going to double and accelerate our abatement, that comes at a significant cost. And you can see that in your energy bill. You can see that for the people of Tomago, for the people of Mount Isa, for Whyalla, for Port Pirie, who are either lost their jobs or are potentially losing their jobs. So I think we can do this. So the first principle is we want to reduce emissions. The second principle is we've got to do it in an affordable way. And that's what we've said, is we're not walking away from reductions in emissions, but we believe that there is a cheaper, better, fairer way to do it.
You're listening to Radio National Breakfast, and my guest is the leader of the Nationals, David Littleproud. What does all this mean for the cohesion of the coalition?
Well, this is about policy rather than necessarily politics within the coalition. I think there's been a lot of commentary from commentators. The reality is after the election, we made it very clear that we were going to review our policy on net zero. The Liberal Party was undertaking the same. It's been a process we've been very public about. We started in June with Page Research Institute giving us some support around that. And so we got to a juncture where that's complete. And now what we'll do is we'll work when the Liberal Party gets to their position in a constructive way, with a process that both Susan Lee and I both agree on, is that we should get our two positions, bring them together and work through them to work through a coalition policy. And that's a constructive way to do it. But I respect their sovereignty to come to their position, as they've respected the National Party in our process to be able to achieve it as well.
What's the blunt sort of political reality here? If the Liberals come up that their policy is to stick with net zero to 2050, can the coalition stay together when you have two completely different positions on that issue?
Well, those are discussions we'll have if it arises. I don't want to deal in hypotheticals. What we want to do is, from what I've experienced over the last couple of months and seeing the work within the coalition on much of the energy policy, I don't think there's a lot of difference in terms of what we're trying to achieve here. So I think we come to this when the Liberal Party get to their position with good faith and the knowledge that there are a lot more similarities than there are differences.
But in reality, if the Liberals stick with net zero for 2050... the coalition's going to split again, isn't it?
Well, again, I think what we want to do is make sure we create a calm environment for the Liberal Party to complete their processes, and speculating on their position and outcomes when we haven't seen their policy and haven't been able to sit down with them isn't constructive. And I think what I want to do is create the environment for them to be able to work through it without the noise of me over the top of them. They've afforded us that, and we'll afford them the same respect.
Just finally, a Nationals MP, Barnaby Joyce, says this policy change isn't enough to see him back in your party room. Are you trying to get him to change his mind and come back and sit with you in the party room?
Well, this is about policy. It's not about an individual. The National Party is above any individual. We've started this process back in June. It was a unanimous decision by our party room that Barnaby was in that room to go through this process with Page Research. And so we've undertaken it. It came to the head because we wanted to get it aligned with our federal council. We put it out, and if Barnaby wants to come back to the party room and contribute, he's more than welcome anytime. He's still a member of the National Party. We welcome him, but there's no special membership of the National Party. Every member is treated equally. You have the same voice and the same vote in the National Party room as everyone else, and when he's ready to come back, he'll be welcome with open arms.
David Littleproud, I appreciate your time this morning. Thank you again.
Thanks for having me.
So David Littleproud there, the leader of the Nationals and the Shadow Minister for Agriculture. Well, joining me now is Dan Tehan, Shadow Minister for Energy and Emissions Reduction. The Liberal Party is trying to find consensus amongst its own MPs on net zero. Dan Tehan, welcome back to Radio National Breakfast.
Always a pleasure to be with you.
Does this decision by the Nationals, does it make it more difficult for the Liberal Party to remain committed to net zero?
Well, we always knew that the National Party had a process that they had put in place. We've obviously got a separate process. We had a very constructive meeting on Friday amongst Liberal Party MPs. And once again, it was very clear that we agree on the majority of things. Now, we'll continue to also work with the National Party as we have. And as David's just said, there is a hell of a lot that we have in that is similar, hell of a lot that is similar. And so we'll continue that process. I look forward to having further discussions on the fine detail of what they've decided over the weekend, and we'll do that hopefully this week, and then continue our methodical process as well.
You're listening to Radio National Breakfast, and my guest is Dan Tehan, who is